Good afternoon, Muskegon.
Good afternoon, Muskegon.
I'm Chauncey Williams.
And I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now? Your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.
Well, we're out of March, into April. It means basketball is done on the collegiate high school level. And there were some exciting things that did come out of that process. We eventually, you know, we played the Division I state champion in Grand Blanc.
Yes, we did.
We showed pretty well, you know, played them great in the first half. So it tells you right there that Keith's team wasn't too far off the mark. Just a few pieces that was missing.
Yeah.
But that was a very good basketball team.
Yeah, Muskegon played, I would say, probably it's a 32-minute game, right?
Yeah.
They played probably 20 minutes at a great pace with them.
Yes, they did.
Yep, and that's good to say. And then, you know, looking at that coach, it's his third championship, two different programs, and he's known for putting some teams together. So, hey.
Yeah, he got a bigger pool of talent as well. You know, that's always something that we have to deal with being on the west side of the state versus central and mid and the east side is pool, talent pool.
Yeah, our kids are homegrown. We gotta get a stick man, put him together.
Yeah,
they can go get studs.
They go transfer in and in the ready made championship basketball team, man.
That's it. Because when they beat Orchard Lake St. Mary's, Mary Blank, I was like, they real deal.
Oh yeah, yeah. I watched Orchard Lake when they played Clarkston. They really should have got beaten that Clarkston game. They were a good team, but they weren't as solid as I thought they were until I watched them play.
Yes, sir.
But seeing Grand Blanc play Muskegon, I said, man, these guys are good.
They're good. They're poised. And they were, like, on the attack and know what they were looking for.
Yeah.
That little guard in the corner, on the, man, he was just a beast.
He's lights out, man. Yeah. Very impressed with that team. But it also told me that, you know, Coach Guy had a good team.
Yeah, he did. They're young.
He had a good
they
team. We puppies. Just never got our mojo.
Yeah, they never got into the stride. They hit a not a bump, but they hit a consistent base of play. And they thought that was good enough.
Yeah.
And that's not, when you playing, it's like, okay, what is next gear that we got? And what level we going to crank this up a little bit?
Yeah, and I think that came from not having his preseason.
Yes.
That he would normally use to try to mold that team into a championship caliber basketball team. So.
Oh, yeah. And Muskegon summer basketball is important. In the past, I've worked with girls, and we probably played. In the past, we probably went everywhere. We went out of state and whatever. We probably played 35 games. And the girls playing AAU. So. And
very important.
Yeah, very important. Because then that's where you're like, don't say nothing today. Start the second group the whole day.
Right.
Like, hold up. We playing against the best team. No, we're going to start the whole second group the whole day so we can humble them.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, I don't want to start, coach. I'm like, okay. Oh, you ready now? You ready to listen? So he missed those opportunities.
Yeah.
So like when you coaching this all time, it's like, all right, going out there.
Yeah, yeah. That's like, when you get to test them.
We only got five guys today. Hey, y'all got more playing time today. Go ahead.
Okay.
So then now you're like, he's a stud. He's a first year player. I didn't know he was that good. Is it an 11th grader or a 10th grader?
Yeah.
Because he's going to put him in a situation where he has to perform and there's only five people in the summertime because somebody going to do track, somebody going to do football. And your other players that usually start gone. So now you're working on that next mix of guys. And you're like, you got to play the point today. You're like,
which is important.
Practice. You're like, well, today, the old day.
Yep.
I go against the best team in the state in the summertime. Well, you listening. Everybody get that opportunity. You be listening there. What you want me to run?
Right. And that was that's what was missing.
Yes, sir.
But anyway, get ready for next year.
Yep.
Hopefully we get COVID behind us, which decimated a lot of programs this year, unfortunately. But it is what it is. Everybody played under the same circumstances.
Yes, they did. And everybody did. And it just shows perseverance all the time. But also getting at the policy level and the civic level, look how Governor Whitmore was so strong about keeping us limited. And now we burgundy. We're not even red.
No.
We like your sweater you got on today.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a problem. They said in almost 7 days, it's been 9,000 cases a day.
That's a lot of cases, man.
12 deaths.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. And then, but look, like you said, we talked off air. The age group now is younger. It's like 20.
20 to 40.
Yes.
Is that age group, man, that before basically just was not even in that matrix. right? Right. They never contracted it. But this is the variant of the traditional COVID-19 that we know about. And unfortunately, you know, that group seems to be invincible. You know, they don't think anything can happen to them.
That's right. And I've seen them on Facebook, with their masks off in another state.
Oh, gosh.
They somewhere hanging out. It's crowds of them. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'm good out here. I'm young and energy and
strong.
The hospital is filled up. Probably about 90% now.
90%. Yep. So, you know, even with the vaccine, because it hasn't really, you know, made it to that age group, it's going to be important that they do get it to that age group. Eventually, so we can help stem this tide. But, you know, it's really weird when we think about all the precautions that were taken in the state of Michigan.
How good we were doing.
Yeah. You know, our numbers were excellent. And, you know, for the most part, I'm going to say 80% of the population was compliant. And then we get this third wave. And it's a hot spot. Michigan is a hot spot.
So for what does that do for us financially? Because they were talking about sporting events should be shut down. Restaurants should probably roll back.
Yep.
Entertainment should roll back. It's like we're never going to hit a consistent groove financially. And imagine being someone that was a recent college graduate between jobs. And you trying to get traction into a new job in a new space. And before COVID happened, you probably graduated from college or you was transitioning gig work or something. Now it's gone. It's scary.
It is. You know, even if you attempt to work from home, there's still a certain amount of training that has to be done. And, you know, that can put you behind the eight ball. You know, so it's a tough position. I think she did not want to make the mandate only because of all the flack that she caught before about shutting down. Just make a recommendation that we do better as far as adhering to the CDC guidelines. But, you know, it's really up to the people.
Yes, it is. We got to make the decision.
Ultimately.
And I was watching, you know, her press conference today.
Okay.
The governor. And she was talking about, like, getting everybody vaccinated. But then going to the Johnson & Johnson vaccination.
Yep.
They had to pull it.
Yep. It got pulled before the blood clots. You know what's weird about
it? It's only six people.
Six people. And they're all women.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't get the age groups of those individuals, but you know, it's at least it prompted the medical community to take a step back and try to figure out, you know, even if it's only six, why is it that six? And you know, the pause, it's the Johnson & Johnson pause, but they said they got the Moderna and the Pfizer. That's more than enough to continue the vaccination. Because I know Sunday they did at the community college, they did the drive-through testing.
Yes, sir.
And, man, they had a great turnout. Wow. I'll tell you, cars were lined up all the way down Quarter Line and Marquette Street.
Because people are not letting them, companies are not letting people go back to work unless they got a test.
Especially after spring break. You know, and that brings up another question as to, you know, can companies actually force people to take the vaccine?
Yeah, or supply a card to say I did it.
Yeah, yeah. There's another group that's saying that's kind of a, you know, an infringement on your rights because you're creating another segment of the population that chooses not to get it that we're going to ostracize, and you know, it's an individual decision, but for me, from a personal standpoint,
yes,
it was not that hard of a decision.
Yeah, I'm thinking about my wife got the shot, right? She got the Johnson & Johnson.
Okay.
So now I'm in trouble at home. She like, if I die, it's on you. I'm like, oh, no. So I'm praying. Like, no, God, cover us.
Okay. No, she good.
She's silly like that, though. So I'm like, we got that shot, and look what they just did.
Right.
I'm like, oh, help.
Okay, it's all your fault.
I be scared. So I'm going to watch. I'm on that watch night tonight. So
sleep with one eye open.
So, but I was like, it's only six people, baby. Things happen.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know if they had pre-existing conditions or what.
Absolutely. Yeah, like, some genetic gene or whatever, you know. But that, I guess that's the reason for the pause, is to try to figure that out. So people's level of confidence, right? It's already at a point where people do question.
They shaky about
the vaccine, and you have that happen, and it kind of reinforces their belief as to maybe, wow, I shouldn't get it. But if you come up with the correct answer, hopefully, that will put people at ease. They will continue to get vaccinated.
But let me ask you this question, though, because we're a financial show, right? I wonder what the numbers look like when you pull a vaccination like that. How much money is that? They set aside $5 billion, right?
Oh, yeah, there's a huge amount of money on the table when you think about
vaccinations.
The vaccination, the amount of money that went into the research of it, because that's that upfront cost.
And then, right? If you're talking about a vulnerable community, usually like people that don't have transportation to get both shots, they can't schedule for that, they can't get off work.
Yep.
Or just somebody say, I just want one shot, I'm good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's people that, you know, just really not mobile enough to go stand in line to get a shot, don't have transportation to get a shot, but are willing to get one. You know, how do you accommodate those
folks?
So they
go to Myers, they can like, boom, we can get it in Myers. And Johnson Johnson was in Myers.
Yeah. Well, I got mine in Myers, and it was the Pfizer. So, you know,
you
I don't
know. You got two, didn't you?
Yeah,
so you like me,
two.
I got two, too.
Yeah. And again, you know, there's logistics to those individuals getting to Meijer, right? And elderly people, you got a bus, and you know, you got to get in there, you stand in line or what have you. So, but there's one state, man, it's that has done door-to-door. They have gone to a door-to-door concept for those individuals that are not able to get out. So we're a long way away, man. The finish line is far off in the distance. We can't even see that finish line right now.
No, we can't even visualize it.
So, and with this, again, third wave, which is, I don't think it's maturated yet. We don't know at what point it will, but, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. Yep. People still got to stay vigilant, wear your mask, do your social distancing, washing your hands, that whole nine yard, man, and hopefully this thing won't take hold.
Then we got just all these layers of other stuff like this, this killing of this young brother that was 20 years old.
Yeah.
That got pulled over for like a expired tag or the wrong tag, and he had a small warrant for marijuana or something.
No, I don't even think it was that.
Misdemeanor. It was a small misdemeanor.
It was a misdemeanor. Let me tell you some more about that information. They were doing Zoom arraignments, okay? And the court sent his notification for his Zoom meeting to the wrong address. So he never even got notified of his arraignment, which is still a misdemeanor now, okay? Wasn't it kind of a third-degree felony?
You're in a police car and you're looking. You're like, oh, this is nothing.
Yeah.
A civil infraction. It's nothing.
Civil infraction, right? And what they did was not necessary, okay? For the simple reason that, and we've had this conversation about community policing, right? We're not adversaries, okay? We're here to make sure that the community remains safe. Pulled the guy over, said, hey, you do have a warrant for your arrest. I just want you to know. And you really need to contact the courts on the next available date and make arrangements to fix this. Yep. Okay?
Imagine that conversation. Like, you pulled me over and I said, you got a warrant. I do. It was something mailed to your address. You should have been able to know that it was. Instead of step out the car.
Yeah. Yeah. Get out the car. And they want a handcuff in the whole nine yards.
It's
not a murder warrant.
But I'm gonna tell you this. This is two ways of looking at it. Because the previous situation with the lieutenant got pulled over by police in Virginia. So I'm gonna give you this right here. I'm about to lay this out. So you look at two people that are both biracial, mm-hmm. African-American, Hispanic, African-American, Caucasian, right? Mm-hmm. So as you can see, the one drop rule, they both black.
There we go.
So anybody will argue with me, there you go.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm Hispanic. No, you ain't.
No.
You African-American. One drop rule, you seeing that when you get pulled over. Yep. You can argue with me all you want. You are African-American. Any biracial kid, don't have them checking them 50 boxes. Mm-mm. You African-American.
That's it.
Because that's how society is viewing. So you can tell me genetic pool or I feel like I'm this. In the end, you're going to be judged with whatever drop is that's prevalent the most.
That's how you're going to be treated.
So, and I'm not saying it's unfortunate, but here it is. It's the point of the dual pandemic. We're in a dual pandemic before we was in COVID.
Okay.
Where we have a privileged mindset that becomes an authoritative figure. right?
Mm-hmm.
Then we have another mindset that's been traumatized in a marginalized community.
Okay.
The scenario is you get pulled over. I'm a citizen. I can ask you a question. What's your reason for pulling me over?
Mm-hmm.
Automatically, it go to doing the most.
Yeah.
With the authoritative person, where they feel that the only way they're going to feel safe is if they got a weapon and you handcuffed.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I got to reduce you to talk to you.
Yeah.
If I can put you on the ground.
Degrade you.
Yep. If I can put you on the ground, put your hands on your behind your back.
I got total control now.
If I got total control, then I'll talk to you calm. So going to the previous incident, because this stuff is like happening week by week.
These are the only ones we know about.
That's right. Somebody say, oh, the internet is a bad thing. It's sure. No, it's actually revealing the truth. But for the lieutenant, when he got pulled over, they used a written word against him. So it was a, like, you know, he got pulled over and they handcuffed him. But it was another video with their body cams, right? Mm-hmm. So they're talking to this brother and they tell him, like, look, you know, you can, if I was you, I wouldn't tell my commanding officers. We'll tell it. Because if you tell it, you know, you're not going to get your promotion. So I'm like,
oh, you're going to get kicked out.
That's how they talking to
yeah,
him, right?
Yeah, we're going to make it bad for you.
Yeah, if you say something, we'll make it bad for you. But if we let us talk, you'll be on your way again. And I was like, hold on. They just used a written word against him. Mm-hmm. And trying to say, if you would have did, you wouldn't have pulled over so late. Now I'm going to ask you this question. You a father. You grew up in this community. You grew up other places. Now I'm going to ask you this question. You done bought your kids cars. You done helped your son out, right?
Right.
I know all African-American men tell their kid this. You driving somewhere. What do you tell when you get your son the car keys and he bought him his first car?
Mm-hmm.
What did you tell him how to, when the police pull you over, what to do? Do you pull over right away or do you pull over what?
You try to get to an area that is well lit. Mm-mm. Okay.
And this is the first time I ask you this question.
Yes, it is. We have not had this discussion. Okay. And you always keep your registration in your driver's license, in your certificate of insurance, over your sun visor. Do not put it in your glove box. Do not put it in your armrest. Don't want you to try to look for it at all. That's where these documents go when you get in the car. Because sometimes you need to make sure that you do everything correctly. So therefore, you don't give them any reason to try to escalate the situation. And anybody, any commanding officer will tell you that they've always employed people to go to an area where it is well lit. Simple reason is there are people that have gotten pulled over by people that were not police officers. Okay?
That's right. Pretending to be police officers.
Yeah.
Robbing people.
We've had this happen. So in order
to
protect.
You can buy a police car and paint it.
Yeah. So if you travel at a low rate of speed to an area where you're ready to adhere to whatever those rules are, that is not a problem.
But that was the problem.
That was the problem.
And then they couldn't see that he bought the new truck. I'm glad you told me about not to buy no new cars. I was going to buy a truck just like that with the black wheels. That was my truck he was in. I was going to upgrade my truck. I'm scared, man. I ain't touching that.
But still, man, come on. These guys get out of their car. Out of their cruise with the guns already drawn.
Already drawn.
And the man got his hands out the window. Totally compliant. And they basically escalated that situation.
Yep, I saw another video. One of my friends sent me another video of somebody of a lighter you. He gets pulled over and they got their guns drawn.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell him they're going to arrest him. He's like, look, all right, look, I'm telling y'all now, I'm about to drive off. Get their hands off him. He drive off. Like, don't do it, sir.
You seen that?
I'm going to send you the video. I saw it.
I seen it today.
You seen the same video?
I seen it today.
So I'm like, hold on.
And he drove off.
He drove off.
And they stood there and watched him.
Please, sir, don't drive off.
That's exactly what they said. And he was not an African American.
No, he was not.
Okay.
He told him what he was going to do. Get y'all hands off me. Don't touch me. Close my door. And they did everything he said.
And they did everything he said. There was another situation. Black police officer. I believe she was in, it might have been St. Louis. This has been 11 years ago.
Yes, sir.
She was with another police officer. They had handcuffed the individual, basically had him under control, and he put him in a deadly headlock. And she stopped him. they fired her. Black police officer, woman. And they fired her. Took her retirement. It took her 11 years to fight it in the Supreme Court. And it ultimately won, where she got her full retirement, her back pay, and the whole nine yards, because the courts deemed that she was doing her job by not standing by and watching another officer break the law.
But 11 years.
So 11 years ago.
So look what happened to her life in 11 years financially. Come on, man.
Yeah.
She lost all her credibility.
Yeah. No telling what else she lost, man. 11 years without employment.
A house. She had to probably stay in somebody's basement. People don't understand that the decisions of privilege is crazy. And it's dealing with, like, trying to make sure that you have to apologize or get permission to have something. And you get to the point when you there and they give you, somebody give you permission, as long as it's not more than what I get.
Right.
That's what it's looking like, this authority type of thing. It's like, all right, you able to go here. You could be this, but you can't be this. Or you could do this, or you can't. And it's not everybody. I'm thinking about James Baldwin. James Baldwin was a great speaker. He said three things. He said, I'm not in the NAACP because I don't fit. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm not a Muslim because I don't think all white people are bad.
Very true.
And he said, I'm not a Christian. He said, I'm not in the church because I'm not going to be judging like some people in the church do.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I find myself in a space forming my own opinions about the relationships I have with people. And that's how
and,
I feel.
And that's okay.
Because I got friends and I got people I work with that I love.
From all don't look like walks me. Of life.
But then I know of some people that don't feel me. That
okay.
That's not.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to give an example. I'm here. So, like, in the mornings, I do a little exercising. And my wife do a little exercise. But we do it in two different places. And I've never thought about this. And she asked me a question. Say, do the police speak to you when you jog at? I say, never. Not in the whole year. Not one day. She said, do you try to speak back? I said, yeah. I wave my hands and I jump up and down. And they look the other way. She said, well, they try to speak to me every day. They roll the window down and everything.
Mm.
And I said, hold on. This is the same police that do the same perimeter I'm in.
You know why.
Yep. So I was like, wow. But there it is. Authority figure. It's a black man running. It's a black woman. She looks nice. She's probably single. She's probably single parent.
Mm-hmm.
I can get at her and holler at her. So Community at large.
They're not threatened by her.
That's right.
Okay. They're not threatened by her.
It's like I'm invisible when I'm exercising. And I do it on purpose. But when she asked me that question, it made me really start thinking about my community. We don't have community officers.
No, we don't.
We're lacking.
That is what is missing in policing in America.
So if you see me in Muskegon, you're a police officer, speak to me. And right. Say you heard this on the radio. Start building a relationship with me if you see me out somewhere. Now, I'm not talking about all of them. It's something that's cool.
Oh, yeah.
It's but if I can name you on my hand, that's cool. It's a problem.
I think I can't remember the city in which the young man was killed in Minnesota, but it's a suburb. It's just
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Okay. And they were interviewing the city manager, talking about the number of police officers that actually live in the community. First off, the question was, how many officers do you have on your force? And it was like 49. How many actually live in the community of Brooklyn? Zero. That's a red flag in itself.
So then now, that's going to be the redlining for the neighborhood we're going to police.
Yeah. Yeah. But we have no vested interest in really policing this community because we don't live in it.
No, we don't.
Okay. Growing up, I think we all can remember situations where the community police officer, we may have some interaction.
Man, I got some stories.
And
I can give you one positive and one negative.
Turned out positive because I know the people that live in Muskegon that grew up knew Officer Baustrom. He was our community officer, white officer. But I will be honest to tell you that at no point in my time had I ever ran across anybody that said they felt that Officer Baustrom did them wrong.
And there's some good ones out there. That's why I say some good ones out there.
And he lived in his community, okay? Came to all of sporting events, walked the community, was one of those guys, man, that you could talk to. And that's all we're asking for. Everything doesn't have to be escalated to the point of, you know, pulling a revolver.
Imagine if you just doing your patrol and you roll up, hey, what y'all doing? What y'all doing today? I'm officer, what you call it?
Yep.
And if they get funny, they get funny. But now you know them.
Yeah.
And you like, do it again. Like, hey, y'all, I see y'all here again.
We just having a conversation, man.
It's like being in a store and saying, man, can I help you? And they could be stealing, they could not be stealing. They could be doing something wrong, they could not. But you approaching it with a neutral mindset, accepting people to be who they, to be people and human beings. And a lot of times, police officers, some people that's in these fields, they think their job is not to be, to not serve humanity. Your job is to be humane first.
It is.
So learn how to be humane when it's before the situation is escalated, so you could be in a space where it's great. So it's just imagine that when you think about a zip code where they don't have a police officer there at all, living in that community at all. How is that community looked at? And then think about the financial repercussion, probably in that community. The financial thing, is it redline? Are the property seems low?
Oh, absolutely. You know it is.
Are you building anything in that city?
Totally segregated.
Right? So you got to think, if they not living there and they policing it.
You know, and that's what escalated the George Floyd situation, right? The counterfeit bill we're talking about, right?
Yeah, $20.
Handled all wrong. Police don't need to be called for a counterfeit bill. That's a Treasury issue, okay? This should that call, when it came over the 911, that call should have never been dispatched. That is not a police officer's job. That is a Treasury job in the federal government. You take the bill and you mark it for the federal government to come pick it up. Now, you may want to tell them who gave it to you, but it's not an offense that requires the police to show up and escalate the situation to what it turned out to be. No different than, you know, like the analogy you gave, if a kid went into a store and stole a bag of potato chips and you call the police, they want to come and now you're going to rustle. No.
It's not, chips.
That's not what it's about, man. When you show up, you said, okay, you was wrong for that. Will you live? All right?
Yeah.
I'm taking you home. I'm going to take you down here to juvenile detention, get you a charge as a juvenile over a bag of potato chips.
Yeah. I'm going to share something with you. Like, I know you, you've coached in Muskegon and Muskegon Heights. You did. You worked in both areas.
Yep.
And you got clients everywhere. So growing up for me as a teenager, I can give you two experiences. One on the hike side and one coming to Muskegon. I had a sister that lived on Sanford Street down here, right on the corner, right by the old church and the little home. Mm-hmm. So I remember coming across the tracks. It was always like, okay, put your seatbelt on, do the speed limit, because they're going to get behind you down
here. Yep.
They're going to jump behind you. And everybody from my community knew, like, you coming downtown, you got to be prepared to be pulled over.
That's
because
right.
It was some bad apples down here as police officers.
Oh, yeah.
It was. And they profiled us to death.
Yes, sir.
So you get back to the heights, you thinking you safe. But you get pulled over in the heights, too.
Yep.
But then there's somebody that's patrolled your school, live in your neighborhood, talking to you as if you like they son or they little brother or something.
Mm-hmm.
I remember those conversations. You get treated like you a family member.
Yeah.
Like, what's wrong with you, boy?
Yep.
Like, you what you calling them people? I see this address. Oh, I know who you are.
Yeah. I'm taking you home.
Yep. You get pulled over somewhere else. It's like, you like, man,
you going to jail, dog.
Yeah, you scared. You scared for your life. I remember growing up like that as a teen, at 17 and 18, having my license. And like, I got to cross these tracks. I'm going straight over my sister.
Don't be joyriding in downtown.
Yep. License, legal, insurance. I had everything. And I used to be so scared to death. And I'm going to get this story. I have my nephew in the car with me. He like 28 years old right now. And we driving downtown in the wintertime. And I just got so tired of it. I drove, police got behind me, then another squad car, like getting ready to ambush me. So I turned in the hospital, and I told him to pretend that he had an emergency. It's like I was getting ready to get set up.
Okay.
And nothing wrong. I was a freshman in college. I was just coming home. And I was that frightened and afraid. Because I said, like, hold on, why he behind me? Then I look up another one coming. It's like they getting ready to block me in.
Box you in. Okay.
Yeah. So I just turned and went to the hospital. Listen, I'm educated now. So think about that. Okay. A young college student coming home, we're ready to go visit his family. Got my nephew in the car with me. He like 4 years old. And I'm telling like, play like you hurt so I can take you in the hospital.
Just because you're afraid of the interaction.
Because I got tired of
with
it.
The police officer.
Yep, get tired of like always getting questioned and always got to ask permission to be myself.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen those clips, man, where a guy gets stopped. Where you going? Where you been?
Like, that's why I used to get asked. I'm like, where I'm going?
No, that's not a part of the process, Doc. Let me tell you.
Man, that stuff put fear in you, man, as a young man. So yes. We're a finance show, but this finance stuff because you're like, I ain't going to live there because the police pick with me all the time.
Yeah, but this is also a current event that I think the community, you know, need to have these conversations with their children.
Yep.
Okay. I hope many have already had these conversations, but if you haven't, you need to have these conversations as to what conduct you need to display in the event you are pulled over, right, wrong, or indifferent. Chances are you're probably doing nothing wrong. And even if you have done something wrong, it's still, you know, a protocol that you got to follow because whatever it is, it ain't worth getting killed over.
Yep. So then, and with our community rebuilding, and then we have these people that's in the surrounding cities that want to turn Muskegon County into the Big Ten, where we got all these separate cities.
Right.
And everybody got their own little county building, yeah, which sounds crazy. That's letting you know already that when the gentrification starts really hitting and the change comes, who are we serving and protecting? Who are we watching go?
Yeah. And that example is just a prime example of school districts, right? And it's Muskegon County. You can just count the number of school districts we have.
Too many.
Way too many. And the purpose in that is to
segregate. Be
segregate,
real.
Maintain their identity of whatever that they want it to be. So we don't have to deal with the Muskegon Public School System or the Muskegon Heights Public School System.
That's right.
Or whatever it is. But for a county this size, it's no reason that we have 8 and 9 different school districts.
That's right.
Makes no sense.
Yeah, because you don't want the races to mingle or mix.
That's it.
And you want to keep
call certain, it what you want, but
certain
what
zip
is.
Codes. Because if a zip code entails how successful I be or how long I'm going to live, something wrong.
Yeah.
And Muskegon is in a micro situation where you can see it.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing for us, we one incident away from Olympia, Annapolis, because just like the Twin Cities, we got pockets.
Oh, come on.
Pockets of privilege, pockets of poverty.
Yep.
We got them. And then we also got the race mixing. We got the biracial kids.
Yeah,
we got them.
We do.
We got people that love people.
Yep.
You know, we got people that love interracial relations, which is great because that shows diversity in our city, in our melting pot. But then you got some people that's on one side. But here's the real, real science for everybody. Right now, in America, 50% of school-age kids are minorities.
That's half.
So if you're thinking you're trying to preserve a privilege, 50% of school-age kids in America, either Asian, African-American, Latino, some type of brown or yellow person, Native American, is 50% in public school are minorities. So what does that mean for the future?
Okay, yeah.
It's coming.
Yep.
A diverse county, a diverse city, a diverse nation is really coming.
Whether you want it or not.
Whether you want it or not. So however you push back, and however you try to fight, because you see Muskegon finally getting its due when it comes to financial liberties and access to upgrades to structures that's hundreds of years old.
Yeah, and there's a lot of money that is going to flow into this community behind this stimulus package. There's hopefully it's going to get approved in the Senate, and we're going to benefit from it, you know. And that was kind of what we wanted to talk about today, but we're going to save that for next week around the infrastructure and the, you know, the green economy and the water. All that is going to be a part of this the spending by the federal government, which is like 100 years past due.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, that's our time today. I'm Chauncey Williams.
And I'm Tony Williams.
And this is What Do I Do Now? Your guide to credit, debt, and planning for your financial success with 103.7 The Beat.